Kakurutau. We'll see you again.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Cataraqui on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land.
This episode of Viewpoints is a rerun.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints on today's show. Well, I'll be out and journalist Pamela Hassan will take over this episode of Viewpoints with the documentary produced in Smithers, British Columbia. And we'll stay outdoors with her and her guests contemplating the great scenery of BC's Whitsitt Canyon. That is where Abigail Joseph goes fishing for salmon.
We are in heaven. My heaven. I absolutely love it here. We're at the Whitsitt Canyon, and there's massive falls, beautiful green turquoise water going into this rush of this heavy flow. It's so powerful, like being so close up to it and feeling the power that comes from these falls is just incredible. And it's my heaven. I absolutely love it here. Salmon is a huge symbol in my life. More recently, I never used to fish. I started and then I left the res, never really came back much. I just started to get back into it because I realized how good it is for my family and how much we eat. And having become a mother, I'm so focused on feeding them good, healthy foods. This is the best it gets, is this fish here, freshly caught, freshly processed. And it also means family.
Welcome to Viewpoints Local News Nationwide. This episode of Viewpoints is a rerun. Happy holidays.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassagne-Well. I'm off on vacation, and during that time, we'll have the great pleasure to have three journalists who will be filling in for me over the next few weeks with three great documentaries. And Pamela Hassan, posted in Smithers, British Columbia, is up this week, bringing us a great documentary telling the story of Abigail Joseph. She's an Indigenous woman, mother of two young children, and provider for her family. In 2022, she gave birth to her son, Theo, and 8 weeks later was back on the slippery boardwalk of Whitsitt Canyon while her mother kept watch over her son and alerted Abigail when it was time to come ashore for his feedings. Abigail's commitment to fishing for her family's food year-round exemplifies the new generation of Wet'suwet'en change makers. These young leaders are boldly redefining gender roles and forging deep connections with the land, all while honoring their ancestral traditions and experiencing the change in the environment. So, how did Abigail start fishing? Who taught her? Does she feel connected to her heritage when she's fishing? Audiences nationwide will hear learn about the life of Abigail Joseph and also the method of dip netting, a traditional fishing method. Listen as we meet with Abigail Joseph and the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries Executive Director Walter Joseph, as well as Abigail's mother. Here now is Pamela Hassan's documentary.
He was washing the blood and the guts off of the rocks that he gutted the fish on to leave it in good condition, but it's also respect for the canyon.
That's Abigail Joseph, speaking to me on the rocks beside today's fishing spot at the Whitsitt Canyon in northern British Columbia. Abigail and her brother JJ, two of her nephews, along with her seven-month-old daughter Mia Maud, have spent the morning fishing for salmon using the traditional dip net method passed down for generations of Wet'suwet'en fishers. All right, so Abigail's putting the rope around her waist. Nice long piece of orange rope, which is attached to, it's called the ladder, which is kind of like a steel gate that we're walking on. Oh, and I already have mist on my camera lens.
I'm perched on the rocks above the ladder where Abigail is fishing, and I'm looking down, taking photos of her. I am absolutely on edge here, watching her fish and just shocked at how fast she's moving. I think you can hear it in my voice how excited I was when I saw her pulling up the meters-long pole with the net full of fish on the bottom of it.
Holy! Oh my
God. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's 9 fish. Oh my God.
Washing her hands. Wow, that was a lot.
If you've never witnessed someone dip net fishing before, it can be exhilarating. It's muscular and fast, and the bright turquoise water of the Wet'suwet'en in Whitsett, a First Nations community along Highway 16, is not water to be taken lightly. No one is rafting here or swimming. This is serious water and demands respect from those Wet'suwet'en fishers brave enough to perch along rocks and ladders for those sleek, jumping fish fighting their way back up a river. This story is about one of those fishers, Abigail Joseph. Abigail is a mother of two young children and provider for her family. In 2022, she gave birth to her son Theo, and 8 weeks later was back out on the slippery boardwalk of Whitsett Canyon while her mother kept watch over her son and alerted Abigail when it was time to come ashore for his feedings. Abigail's commitment to fishing for her family's food year-round exemplifies the new generation of Wet'suwet'en changemakers. These young leaders are boldly redefining gender roles and forging deep connections with the land and water, all while honoring their ancestral traditions and experiencing the change in their environment. This is a special episode of Viewpoints, produced and hosted by me, Pamela Hassan, from CICK News in Smithers, British Columbia. Can you describe where we are?
We are in heaven. My heaven. I absolutely love it here. We're at the Whitsett Canyon, and there's massive falls, beautiful green turquoise water going into this rush of this heavy flow. It's so powerful. Like, being so close up to it and feeling the power that comes from these falls is just incredible. And it's my heaven. I absolutely love it here. Nice little valley that we're in. Beautiful trees around us. We see lots of bears down the up the river, and deers, and there's a fisheries. Lots of hot rocks, which makes it really hot when we fish. But yeah, this is my slice of heaven.
It can't be easy for a young mother to stop everything in her day, request babysitting help from her mother, and run to the canyon because the waterline is right or the salmon are active. So here's Corinne, Abigail's mother, describing a typical day when Abigail finds that the fishing is good in the canyon and they head out to the water.
She knows my schedule, so which day I can and can't go. But in the summer, I only work 2 days a week, so it's lighter than the other time. And so she would let me know, and usually when it's the season, we keep that on the radar, and it would be the first thing I would do if she calls me. I don't try to do other stuff as much. Then I say, yeah, okay, let's do it. And she stops at my house, and then we take my car, and then we can put the two baby in there. And then we go to the house, pick up the dip net, one or two, and we use my car, and then we park mostly on the side after the bridge. We have everything ready for the day, so we take lunch, we take snack, we take a blanket, we take chairs, water, and toys for the kids. Mm-hmm. And then she starts fishing, and she goes from one spot to another, and at times, so this year I was able to pack Mia and then make sure Teddy is close by. I just wanted him to look and see, not too close, but so they can see what mom's doing.
Salmon stocks are unstable. Due to the changes in climate and overfishing from Alaskan fisheries, BC salmon is not necessarily in abundance the way that it has been for decades prior to this point in time. Skeena Wild, a conservation trust, released this year's salmon returns, and the numbers are predicted to be normal to low returns for the Skeena and Wet'suwet'en, a trend of lower stocks each year since the heat dome of 2021. But Wet'suwet'en families have sustained life due to this river for centuries, and Abigail is the new generation of fishers participating in her rightful place in this cycle of salmon, life, and the Wet'suwet'en.
Hi, I'm Abigail Joseph. I'm 27 years old, born and raised in Whitsett, formerly known as Morristown.
And who is this with you?
This is my 6-month-old, almost 7-month-old daughter, Mia Maud.
Hi, Mia Maud.
Do you want to say something? Hey.
Are there many women fishing, especially dip net fishing?
There's more women starting to dip net now. Yeah. Back in the day, there was Betty Joseph, who was one of the first dip netting fisherwomen. She worked for the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries. She's incredible, so amazing at fishing. I was too young to witness her fishing a lot. I think I vaguely remember her fishing. I started fishing at 15. My sister doesn't fish anymore, but there are so many other empowering women who are fishing here. There's definitely become a lot more women doing it in the past couple of years that I've seen. It's usually typically been male dominated.
Yeah.
Here's Walter Joseph, outgoing fisheries director for the Office of the Wet'suwet'en.
You've spent decades on the Wet'suwet'en watching the water, watching the river, watching the fish, watching the people fishing. How common have female fishers been at the canyon?
When I started, they were pretty rare. The only one that sticks to my mind would be Abigail's aunt, Betty Joseph. She worked for our program for many years until arthritis became an issue for her.
Okay.
Yeah. She was the only one that I knew of. But once the runs started declining, I think it just became pressure for the poor females who have families that, geez, we still need food fish, but there's nobody fishing, so I'm going to go fish.
Yeah.
So that became the norm. And I think one of our fisheries employees, Sherry Green, actually started, there's fishes running and there's nobody fishing, so we'll go fish. They said, ladies, let's go fish. So a bunch of them got together and they went down there and they started fishing. But Abigail, I don't really know when she started fishing. It's just in the last couple of years I noticed her down there. I think a couple of years ago I took a picture of her climbing around on the rocks in the canyon and some really crazy places. I was thinking, if she worked for me, she would not be fishing there. It's just too dangerous. But she was right in there.
This episode of Viewpoints is a rerun.
What does salmon represent to you as a fisher and as a mother as well?
Salmon represents life to me. It feeds my family and it has for years. We grew up fairly poor, and if we didn't catch fish or shoot moose, like, we wouldn't have food for the winter. Salmon is a huge symbol in my life. More recently, I never used to fish. I started and then I left the res, never really came back much. I just started to get back into it because I realized how good it is for my family and how much we eat. And having become a mother, I'm so focused on feeding them good, healthy foods. This is the best it gets, is this fish here, freshly caught, freshly processed, canned and preserved within 24 to 48 hours of catching it. And it also means family. I remember growing up and I have five siblings, there's five of us, and we'd all be down here. My dad would be catching all this fish and then we would spend a couple days gutting the fish, filleting the fish, canning the fish, and it was always like the women, my mom and my sister, doing it. So fish to me also means family, because every time there's fish around, that means we're with family and we're fishing together and we're preserving together and we're learning together, because every year I learn something new. My mom is incredible and has helped me learn so much the last couple years, and I never realized how important good food is until I've had children. Till I'm like, I want the food. The fish from the store is garbage and it's crazy expensive. It's my right to fish here in these waters because my ancestors did. So I want to definitely take advantage of my right to fish here because they're powerful, they're beautiful, and they connect me to the land and the water, which I feel is so important for everybody.
It's a critical piece of Wet'suwet'en culture. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of traditions built up around it. I think some of the oldest archaeological evidence of the communities are based on fishing. It's a long history there of food fishing. So I think that's a critical piece that the Wet'suwet'en need to protect and ensure it continues.
So you were saying earlier about how you want her to be able to fish here as well, but talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I applied for their status card. I have my full status, and when I applied for my status card, it was denied due to a second generation cutoff, according to the Indian Act, which I think is very unfair because she's just as native and she's got the same blood that runs through me. She should have every right to have her status card. And if she doesn't get it, she will not be able to come and fish here freely like I can without me, right? She won't be able to catch as many as she can for her family in the future without that status card. And that's thanks to the Canadian government.
Yeah.
So I think there might be a loophole. I'll have to reapply for a different, under a different section for my status card, which will then hopefully give her some Indian status according to the government. But yeah, it's unfortunate that I have to even fight for this because they're my children.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to dispute my children being enough Indigenous to qualify for this. I think that's absolute BS.
Yeah. It feels like you're forging a new path for your daughter, right? But you're also using such traditional methods. So do you feel like you're a traditionalist, or do you feel like you're the next generation of young Wet'suwet'en women?
I feel like I could say I'm both. Yeah. I am very traditional in many ways, and I would love to be more cultural, and that is traditional. But I do feel like I remember a girlfriend of mine. She started fishing. She's from here, and she started fishing, and she was fishing in places that I was too afraid to fish.
Okay.
But then once I saw her fishing there, I'm like, I can do that too.
What was
absolutely?
Why did you not want to fish there? Like, what was scary?
I never thought I could. My brothers also said, "Oh, it's too strong for you." So I was like, you know what? They know all of these holes. They've been fishing since they could freaking hold a dip net. Yeah. They know these holes. They know their sister. And I've not always been a bigger woman. I feel like I've always been a bit smaller, more muscular, but they know their sister and they care for me. So they were like, yeah, I think that's too strong for you. They also don't want to lose their dip nets, right? If something goes wrong, it's not just me falling in, but we're also losing a dip net, which costs hundreds of dollars to replace. So they're also like, I don't want you to wreck our dip net and I care about your life. So I don't think you should fish in this hole. My girlfriend, Nat, would not let anyone tell her she can't do it. And she'd go and dip net. And I'm like, man, if she can do it, I can do it. And then she would encourage me to fish there as well. We loved to encourage each other. And I found that once I saw her doing it, I was like, I can do that too. And my brothers were skeptical, but I tried it and it wasn't as hard as they said it was. It was hard. Don't get me wrong. It's all really hard, but it just takes practice to learn the waters, to learn the current, where the fish are. And yeah, to me personally, I haven't been able to get out much because I just had a baby in January.
Yeah.
So I went and I was fishing a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of the salmon run, and the water was still really high and I haven't worked out much. So it was really hard to catch fish. So to me, it wasn't the best year, but I've heard that there was a pretty good run a couple weeks ago, and now there have been an incline, I believe, in the last few years. But for me right now, I definitely haven't caught as much fish as I normally do.
Yeah.
because I have two kids.
Under two?
They're all within two, yeah. Teddy just turned two, and Mia Maud is 7 months old.
Before you were fishing, Abigail, did you feel like there was a part of you missing, or was it like a something clicked in moment when you realized that you wanted to do it? But who do you think you were before and then after you started fishing?
I've grown so much. Mainly also because I did become a mom and my priorities have changed and I see the world so differently since becoming a mom. But I do feel like fishing has had a lot to do with that. I drank a lot when I was in my late teens and early 20s. And I do feel like in the summertime especially, people drink more because of the sunshine. And I quit drinking and I started fishing more. And I just feel like that was a really good outlet for me because I would come every 2 days for a couple weeks, but it was also discipline because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to continuously throw your net out there, fight against the current, gut the fish. It's so hard to crouch down in your natural resting position and gut fish by the river. It is so hard. I didn't know how hard it was until I was doing it. And I was gutting like 20 fish one day and I was like, I had to always stand up and rest. And then you got to pack that fish out yourself. And I don't have, like, my boyfriend's working. He's typically working during the salmon run. So he's not down here helping, but my brothers were not usually around either. So it's just my mom and I, my kid. And it's hard work and it's discipline to want to do it, but it's also like a healthy outlet to release energy because you're using so much of your energy and channeling it into your dip net to catch that fish. By the end of the day, you have had an successful fishing day, and even a bad day of fishing beats a good day of anything else. Yeah, it's pretty funny, but I always think of that. I'll come here and catch nothing, but it'll still be one of the best days that I have of the summer.
Young girls that are maybe, let's say, 15 now or something like that, do you think they see you, and do you think you're for them what, when you saw women charging these waters, do you think that's who you are for any 15-year-old girls out there?
I've never thought of that, but I sure hope so. I remember growing up and always telling myself, I want to be someone who I needed at 15. And I do feel like I do a lot of more masculine roles. Like, I like to fish and hunt, and I'll get a fish, I'll get bloody, I'll get dirty. I'm not afraid of that. I followed my brothers around everywhere. I love to do outdoorsy things. And I do feel like me being out here as a woman, it does help other women think, hey, if she can do it, I can do it. But yeah, I would hope that I am that kind of role model for some of the young girls here, because I know it is so important to have those people to look up to.
It's something that I grew into and try to come up with a program that will meet the community's needs. Mm-hmm. And something that became really apparent is how important the food fisheries are.
Yeah.
To the Wet'suwet'en, protecting those resources and meeting their needs for food fish,
yeah.
I think are the critical issues for the Wet'suwet'en.
In your time in Whitsett, did you ever see Betty Joseph fishing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was. That's the only one I remember of woman doing it for years. Mm-hmm. She was pretty strong, yes. And then I was pretty excited when Abby wanted to do it, because I thought, yeah, that's awesome. Pass it on for more women to be there, because there's not too many.
Yeah.
My other daughter, Joy, did it for a bit, but she's not doing it anymore. And then there's not two, and a couple of other girls.
Yeah.
There's not many, because it takes a lot of strength.
Yeah.
And then if you have babies like Abby, you have to have someone else to help. I could stay at the house with the kids, and then she can go on her own, but because she's still breastfeeding baby girl,
yeah,
she can't be gone too long. She feels so good about catching the fish, and I think there's some kind of adrenaline to doing that, and pulling two or three fish back out from the canyon in the net, and Yeah, it's quite a big thing. She's excited about it.
Did you ever get nervous watching?
I was just more proud. Yeah. And I trusted. I know she wanted to do it. I trusted her, and I knew she was strong because she was doing a lot of exercise, especially last year. And no, I never had fear, just like when my husband was doing it or my boys. But my husband did fall in the water 2 times in his life. But he had the rope. They have to have the rope. Mm-hmm. And then they pulled him out.
Okay.
But Abby never failed, and yeah, she will not fall.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. It was hosted and produced by me, Pamela Hassan, for CICK News in Smithers, British Columbia. Thank you to my guests, Abigail Joseph, Corinne Joseph, and Walter Joseph, for speaking to me about Abigail the Fisher, who caught my eye in 2022, and I was so grateful to have the opportunity to finally visit at the canyon and speak to her about her love of fishing. Music for this episode of Viewpoints was found on freemusicarchive.com and purpleplanet.com. Viewpoints is the Community Radio Fund of Canada's national weekly radio program. Funding for Viewpoints is provided by Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiative Program.
This episode of Viewpoints is a rerun. Happy holidays! Thanks so much to Pamela Hassan and her many guests for filling in for us this week. A great documentary about people doing unusual things while keeping traditions alive. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. For comments, story ideas, or just to tell us more about yourself, you can write to us. Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Our website is frequencynews.ca. That's it for us this week. Until the next Ciao.
Radio@frequencynews.ca. We'll be right back.
questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
Listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Plugged in My Ears. This week, Kyle, Adam, and I are here, but we're joined by a special guest. Our good friend James is here. James is in physiotherapy at Queen's, but he's quite an athlete himself. James, maybe do you want to just give them a bit of rundown on your athletic trajectory and career real quick so that they understand that you're an esteemed individual, just like the three of us former athletes who are now in retirement?
Thank you very much for the kind words, Sam. I'm in physiotherapy here, and growing up, I played some hockey, lacrosse, and rugby. And then after that, after sustaining some different injuries, mainly concussions, I got into powerlifting. And yeah, stuck with that for a little while and got national records in the squat, bench, and deadlift, 755 squat, 496 bench, and 805 deadlift. So, you know, was eating a lot of food and lifting a lot of weights, and it was a great time. So just hyped to be on the show here tonight, talk some hockey with the boys, and thanks for having me on.
James, buddy, we're bloody happy to have you here. It's not every day that we get to hang out with a national champion or powerlifter, record make breaker sort of thing. But let's get right into it. We got a lot to talk about. The NHL is going crazy. Kyle Adam, I see you jittering over there. You got lots to say. What are you starting us off with?
Well,
today?
I'll start with one thing. I think our old guest, Zach, another powerlifter, has got some competition. I'm not sure he's winning this one, but Zach was another powerlifter we had on. But we'll go into hockey. So I spoke about the Senators. We usually speak about the Senators. I said at the start of the season, I was skeptical on their performance, and looks like things are panning out just how I predicted. The Harden Crown is struck again. is keeping these guys in the bin. I think Stützle's been celebrating a little bit, maybe too much, but looks like he's found his footing a tiny bit more than last season. I don't know about the others, but
I can say after last game, I just watched Vancouver play Ottawa. It looks like they forgot to clean Tom Brady's bum, and his diaper was still full because he had a bit of a temper tantrum out there on the ice.
Yeah.
Never seen such a belligerent player before, but you know, he threw the body quite a bit, got some penalties as per usual when the team was down. He got himself ejected, which was great because with him not being there, the team got a lot better. Tim Stützle also fought, though. So
this is Kachuk?
Yeah, Kachuk got kicked out. Brady Kachuk did, yeah. His diaper was dirty.
Was this against Vancouver?
Yeah, they lost.
I thought Quinn Hughes got kicked out, too, though.
Quinn Hughes got kicked. Quinn Hughes got kicked out.
Double captain.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, double ejection. But Quinn Hughes got kicked out after having maybe three or four shifts in the first period. Honestly, I think it was really just for the optics. The hit wasn't that bad. You know when you pin someone on the board, sometimes they fall? The guy fell and smashed his face against the board. It's like, it was a hit from behind, but that would have been a two-minute penalty if the guy didn't get in.
Knowing Quinn Hughes, I don't think it was intentional.
But no, actually, honestly, I just think he tried to pin the guy and pinned him too hard.
Yeah, he only had six penalty minutes on the season before that. So, I mean, I don't think
he's a pretty clean player.
I don't even think he got his
assist. He's also pretty small, so I don't know. he's about 170 pounds.
He's not
a big boy. I think when you're going into like the boards with that much speed, sometimes it's unintentional to hit someone behind. That being said, with Brady Kachuk, absolute peripheral monster for the fantasy there. I'm sad I didn't draft him, but he definitely had a temper tantrum that game. Who was it that he fought again?
I don't even know. I think it was some call up from
fourth
the
liner.
Yeah.
It
was an unnecessary fight. He did absolutely torch him, but the size difference was huge. So I don't think that's too big of a feather in Brady's cap there.
No, but Tim Stützle also dropped the gloves. That was hilarious. He threw five punches and all five of them hit Casper the Ghost. Watching in the background, not a single one hit whoever he was fighting. It was a pretty interesting spectacle. But even when he got the 5-minute penalty too, when both of them were gone, the Sens started playing better. So maybe it's time to change up the leadership and send those guys back to the bar and bring up some guys from Belleville.
Yeah,
but
I'll say one more thing. I mean, last year I remember saying on the Ottawa like Reddit group chat, like Ottawa Senators Reddit group chat, I made a comment saying like, the goaltending is not an issue. It's fully our defense and team structure. Uh-huh. And I got chewed out so bad. So many people were so mad at me. And I was just like, well, Ottawa has cycled through the most goalies in the entire league. It's not even close. We've had We had Cam Talbot at one point. Mm-hmm. We thought he was terrible. Got rid of him. Oh, look, he was pretty good in LA, and he's actually still pretty good on Detroit right now. So I don't know.
He's not having a bad season.
I don't know if he was that terrible. I mean, okay, I will agree. Some of our goaltending last year might have been a bit dicey, but Allmark's not looking that hot right now. I think he's below 900. So if you told someone that last season, they would probably be pretty surprised.
I think the majority starting goalies are below 900 this year, though.
I think is that universal across the league right now?
I read something that the 900 save percentage is becoming a thing of the past because of how high scoring the league has become. Because of how little shots that they're taking to score as many goals as they are.
I would say there's at least about 10 that have above 900 that I can name off right now. But
I guess I would expect Allmark to be top 10 in save percentage.
But no, and my point is, especially he's a good goaltender. There's no way,
wins of the .938. I believe that was 22-23 for the Boston Bruins, which is insane. He was originally not the starting goalie that year, Swayman was, and then he just kept winning games with ridiculous save percentages. So we know he's got a lot in him. So I think maybe switching cities is affecting him a little bit, but also that Ottawa defense kind of finding their stride is going to be instrumental. Yeah.
Speaking about Swayman, it seems like he got hit by the magic stick of not something good, but he's having even worse of a season than Allmark right now. Yeah. I don't know. The Boston Bruins got hit by something not good.
They're leaning on Corpus Allo now.
Coming from Ottawa.
Swayman was being basically bartering for that big contract, and then he got it, and he's absolutely been just not doing what he needs to do. So hopefully he can figure it out.
Yeah, I saw a clip from a couple games ago. The Bruins got booed off the ice after a pretty fans. Pretty brutal. Yeah, at home at a home game. I mean, we're pretty familiar with that one in Ottawa, but it's a new one for the Bruins based on their last couple seasons.
Sounds like that might start happening in Montreal too.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think that's happening in Montreal.
They won't boo until they miss the playoffs again this year, and then next year maybe. The boos will start.
I think just two more years of booing, and then two more years of losing before the booing.
I don't know. Next year, when Demidov comes over, he's going to tear up the league, win Rookie of the Year. Montreal's going to the playoffs. It's going to be a good time in Montreal.
Heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first. I've been saying this since maybe
speaking of Canadian teams, Connor Hellebuyck leading the Winnipeg Jets to the fastest team in NHL history to get 14 wins. What do we think is so special about the Jets to do that this year early, and do you guys think they're going to continue that?
Well, I think there's a lot to it, but one of the best things that they have is their dynamic, and that they obviously have a first line. They have some guys that are better than others. But if you take their first line compared to the average first line in the NHL, I wouldn't really consider any of their guys super high-end guys. But take their fourth line and compare that to the average third line, pretty consistent. Their third line's pretty consistent with the lower-level second lines, and their second lines could be like a pretty bad slash mediocre first line. I think they're just pretty well-structured and well-rounded. And I think the fact that they have incredibly solid goaltending and reinforces those players' ability to play above and beyond what they should actually be playing. And I think a lot of it really stems from back there. From experience, at least, when you have a goaltender who's that hot and that good, it gives you the confidence to be willing to make mistakes. And when you're willing to make mistakes, you tend to make a lot of good plays because you don't hesitate. And when you don't hesitate, you can do a lot with the puck.
I think Connor Hellebuyck's one of the only goaltenders in the league, even compared to Shesterkin, that's just so consistent. Like, he just never seems to have a bad game. I mean, I've seen him falter maybe once or twice, but it usually isn't even him. It's usually the team had a bad game. But yeah, he's definitely a goaltender you want to have, and I'd hope they don't let him go. I mean, they had a pretty solid season last year, so I'm actually not that surprised. Like, their regular season was very solid last year.
Hellebuyck did seem to not look quite like his usual self in the playoffs last year. After that Vezina performance, I don't know if that was an injury or what was going on there. I agree with everything you guys have said. And then, obviously, Morrissey's a great D-man. Pionk and DeMello have been playing really well on their blue line as well as the other D-core. So it looks like they're all coming together. But back to the confidence thing, when I was watching them on that streak, they just looked unbelievably confident. All their lines were skating really well, and they were just playing with a ton of momentum.
Kyle Connor is probably an underrated player. I don't know if I'd put him in the basement category there, but he's...
I'm not saying he's in the basement category. I'm just saying, like, if you're the team looking to pick up two guys and Mitch Marner and Kyle Connor there, you're probably going to take Mitch Marner.
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean,
I'd take Kyle Connor.
Yeah, he's...
I would as well.
Kyle Connor's pretty solid. He puts a lot of goals up.
Why do you not like Mitch Marner? Please explain it, Adam. Elaborate. What is it about Mitch?
I just think he's, I think he like, he's listening, by the way. He doesn't play up to his, to what he's worth, what he thinks he's worth. I don't know. I really hate when players like want a contract really bad. I know that sounds really bad because like obviously they need contracts, but I don't know. I think Marner thinks he's up there with Matthews and Nylander, and I think Matthews and Nylander are on a different tier than Marner. And I don't know. I think that maybe you should have the confidence and the ego of what your game is like. I don't know what your game actually looks like. I just get a weird vibe from the guy, honestly. I don't think
he's very mature.
I do think he has a little sense of immaturity to him. I'm not trying to bash his play, but I mean, he's just not that guy. I don't know. I think I would want a more of a character leader like Kyle Connor. I mean, you saw Kyle Connor going out there trying to drop the gloves with Crosby. I love that. I mean, anytime you can take out Captain Canada, right?
Captain Canada.
But yeah, no, Kyle Connor is a bruiser. I mean, I don't think Marner's ever gone on a 16 game win streak, anything close to that.
And well, I mean, even does the player go on that win streak or does the team?
I really think Kyle Connor had a major impact on the team going that way. And I don't think Marner can contribute to that. I don't think you can win 16 games with Mitch Marner on your team in a row.
So you think because Mitch Marner's on a team, possible?
I think he's more of a locker room cancer. Yeah, I really do.
So you describe him as like a Montreal Canadiens legend.
I'm not. And you know what?
Just to be clear, you think that he's a bit of a princess.
Marner, 100%.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, and have you seen that Prime show?
Yeah, when Nylander's ripping into him, saying like, stop crying.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the best look on Marner. I mean, it kind of confirmed what I already knew about that team, but yeah, he didn't look the greatest in that. One thing, I'll say one more final thing about the Jets there. The only concern I have is, I think, special teams.
Is their special teams bad? I thought they were doing fine.
I don't think they're bad. I just don't think they're high enough tier to win playoffs.
Okay. Yeah, just with how important special teams are in playoffs. That's just how it is.
If you don't have a good, like, you have to have such a good power play to win the playoffs. Like, that's what carried the Oilers through. It is. Like, they had such a good power play, and they also had a ridiculously good PK.
The Oilers have one of the best PKs in the league, for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's the recipe to win. So, you need to have those, like, locked down. I mean,
You can be confident Dry in his spot on the right side there. You know he's going to start snizzing when the puck goes. And you know McDavid's going to have some crazy feet.
Because 5-on-5 is so locked down in the playoffs. So that's the problem the Jets faced. I think that's what I think happened to them. I watched their run last year. Mm. I would kind of diagnose it as that. They just had a scoring problem.
Sure.
Mostly because they're a 5-on-5 team that just couldn't produce in the...
Well, quick point to finish the conversation with Marner. I mean, the playoffs is just a totally different game. You have almost double the hits a game. He's not a big guy. He's not a super physical player. He scores a lot of his goals off the fast break, and you lose a lot of that in playoffs. You are getting hit a lot more, and I think he shies away from that. I mean, he had 3 points in 7 games, didn't do anything for Toronto in that series. Nylander came back after that concussion and absolutely carried. So, I mean, a guy like Kyle Connor, I'm more confident he's going to score. I mean, he had 3 goals in 5 games over that 5-game span for Winnipeg. So I think Mitch Marner is a great player, but he needs to be more physical if he wants to be able to be like a positive force in the playoffs next year.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Marner's a great player. He's just not as good as he thinks he is.
I mean, I'll hold this statement. I think as soon as he transfers out of Toronto, he'll get much better.
Where Marner should go? Washington.
Why Washington?
That would be interesting.
But why? He can set up Ovechkin to beat the goals record. Washington's buzzing right now.
They're buzzing.
You add Marner to that team where he plays like a third string role behind Strome and Ovechkin. I mean, I think I'd rather play under Strome and Ovechkin than Matthews and Nylander. Matthews and Nylander are great, but I definitely think Marner's playing like third string there. I don't think he likes it. I would rather play third string for a veteran like Ovechkin. That's been around, won a cup, knows what it takes to win. And I think that'd be a perfect spot for Marner to go. I mean, do you think Toronto's gonna like?
I don't think
long-term plans.
No, it's not happening.
I think he's out of the picture in a few years.
So what do you boys? So seeing Washington do so good, I would put them in top six, top seven powerful team in the NHL right now with all the wins they've been getting. They lost a couple after Ovi got out, but what do you think's been the recipe of their success this year?
I mean, they had a couple pickups. One of them. I'm not saying Chychrun is a huge contributor, but they did get Chychrun from Ottawa for essentially a bag of pucks. Quite literally. I can't even tell you what we didn't get him. We got nothing from him. So that was a pretty decent pickup for them. Their goaltending has actually been solid. That's what was able to sustain them last year. Their goaltending won them a bunch of games. So that's part of it. I don't know.
I mean, Ovi, when you have a player like Ovi being that hot, one of the top goal scorers in the league, that's definitely contributing to some of that. He had a hat trick the other game, and yeah.
He's got 15. I think he was leading before he got injured, before he broke his leg. Connor McMichael, really been impressed with him. I think he has 12 goals now. And watching his games, he's so fast. He's super dynamic. He finds himself in a lot of really high chance scoring opportunities on fast breaks. Almost cherry picking, but he's getting those feeds. And honestly, I think he's the real deal. I think he could put up over 30 this year. And I think we might see like a 40, maybe even more in the rest, like throughout his career, goal scores. So,
yeah.
To the goaltending, Logan Thompson's been really good.
Yeah.
Coming from Vegas, he's a solid goalie.
Logan Thompson's
been playing,
good, yeah.
He's been playing great for them. And Lindgren's not shabby either.
No, yeah.
I'm surprised they're splitting 50-50. I did not see that.
Lindgren's good. He was good last year.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought Logan Thompson was good last year. Logan Thompson.
I mean, I think they just don't want to over. Like, if they've got two goaltenders that are relatively equal standing, you don't really want to overwork one of them. So
I don't know. I think that's a pretty good challenge. Pretty good problem to have. Like, I think it's great when you have two goalies who are both hot, both playing well, who have to fight to be number one. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a better problem to have. Like, that's like saying, yeah, the most existentially important player on your team has someone who's equally as important. So if one goes down, you can very confidently replace him with the other.
Oh, I see why Washington's so good.
Why?
They have Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Well, that's actually, he's pretty good.
Well, you know what? If they can make him work, then he can be really good.
But they had some good pickups.
As evidenced by Torts, he can be pretty lazy, and he's happy to get yelled at on the bench. But
oh, yeah, in Columbus. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was some time ago.
Who is the rookie that's on Philadelphia that Torts healthy scratched? Mitchkov, and then just came back and just had, he's been... Mitchkov's
like one of the best players on Philadelphia.
I know.
Torts has got to be one of the smartest mental coaches of all time. I'm telling you, he did that just to light a fire.
For sure.
It worked.
It worked because he came out angry.
What do you guys think about Torts in general? Like a lot of NHL guys think he's a bit of a schmuck. John Scott's biography about himself has a chapter dedicated to how much he hates Torts.
John Scott was a bit of a schmuck too, though.
So I don't know.
No, he's a nice guy. Most people liked him. Patty Kane loves him.
I don't know.
All the guys in Chicago.
I don't know. Yeah.
All the Chicago guys love John Scott.
Okay, but you play against John Scott.
I don't know what the other teams.
Like John Scott. You see the video of him back in?
Yeah. And then did you see what happened to Phil Kessel? Not even a penalty.
I mean, I'd be scared. I'd swing my stick at John Scott.
John Scott didn't do anything to him.
Coming at me.
Do anything to him. Even hit him.
I think Torts is just do anything to win kind of coach, and no one when you're on the losing end of that, I don't think you like it. No, I mean, that's not really surprising, but Philadelphia should not be as good as it is. The same thing happened last season. Like, they were way better than they're supposed to be.
No, you attribute that to Torts.
I just attribute that to him not playing with emotions. Like, if someone's playing bad, he just benched them.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Mitchkov and the Senators, he scored that OT winner a couple weeks back. It was a sharp angle shot. I'm sure Ullmark wanted that one back. That was pretty basic for the goaltender to just hug the post, but he was kind of just mohawking right around the hash marks, got a feed, and just that really quick release just caught Ullmark off guard. So I think Mitchkov's insane. I think he's going to turn into one of the superstars in the NHL. And he's already kind of showing that. And I agree with you, Sam. I think, Torello's master mental coach kind of healthy scratching him, putting that fire under him, and he came back, just looks absolutely unreal. So I'm excited to see what he does for the rest of the season and for the seasons to come.
Oh, likewise. But also, just on a separate talk of rookies, this has been a big debate recently. A lot of people think Celebrini is going to be better than Bedard because Bedard's a bit slower than Celebrini, and Celebrini's bigger, faster, and stronger. I mean, do you guys really think that Celebrini is actually going to be better than Bedard?
I don't know about better. I think they're just different players. I initially said I compared Bedard more to like a Matthews kind of style. Like, Matthews is not known for his like edge work or like smooth skating, I would say. He's more just, he's got a really good shot.
I don't know about that. Matthews is known to be slow, but to have incredible edge work. That was like in his NHL League prospects
perspective,
he was described as one of the most talented and able skaters in NHL history.
I mean, I'll put it this way. Like, if you ask like a bunch of NHL players who's skating would you want, I don't think they're going to name Matthews.
No, they're not. They won't name speed, but I don't think
my point is that Matthews is such a good player because of his goal scoring and shots. I'd attribute Bedard to kind of the same thing. Bedard's got a wicked snapshot and that kind of toe drag release. So I think he's more in that category. So Celebrini's kind of fast and he's a pretty good passer, like more of a playmaker. Bedard's a great playmaker too. I don't know. I don't know if I'd really compare them that way. Like, I think Bedard's got a bit more. He's a bit shorter though. No.
Yeah, Bedard is. I think I want to say he's 5'10". He's 5'10". Yeah, and Celebrini's, I think, 6'1".
Yeah. So he's got a bit of size.
Bedard's a bit of a smaller guy. Obviously, Matthews is pretty huge. He's like 6'3". I mean, I think Bedard's on a different level than Celebrini. I think Celebrini could come into his own. I think Bedard's stick handling is just unreal, and he has that really explosive speed where he can kind of burst into open spaces. And like Kyle was saying, he's got a really, really nice... that kind of toe drag release that Matthews has kind of coined kind of changes the angle on the goalie, and it comes off the stick really quickly, which can be really dangerous for goal scoring. I think it'll be interesting to see how he develops. Obviously, like, being 5'10", it's not small. It's also not huge, though, so we'll see how he is able to kind of, like, play to his game there, but yeah.
Oh, well, average in the NHL is also 6'2" now.
Yeah.
So it is a little bit small.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think, Adam?
I think it's way too early to compare them.
Well, it's kind of like the Ovi Crosby debate when they started.
Yeah, I don't celebrating know. His 23 games into his career. I mean, I don't know.
Actually, yeah, you know what? That's really not like the Ovi Crosby thing, because those guys started the same year because of the NHL lockout. Yeah.
Also, I think Bedard's having a bit of a rough season. And I think if Bedard was setting the world on, you know, if Bedard was playing at the same pace he was playing last year, this conversation wouldn't even be happening. Because I think the only reason he's getting sucked down to Celebrini's level is because of his poor play to start the year. And I also think Celebrini has a better team around him to develop Bedard has in Chicago. I mean, they got Foligno and Taylor Hall, but Taylor Hall's been a healthy scratch for the last two games or something like that now.
Yeah.
Like, San Jose's got Toffoli. They've got a lot of younger talent around them. And, I mean, I like San Jose's
Granlund
situation.
Granlund and Zetterlund have been really good, too. I think Granlund has, like, he's over 20 points now. He's actually been playing really nicely on the top line. Chicago does have Bertuzzi, and they did pick up Teravainen, but they're not doing a whole lot.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think he's got better pieces around him. I also think Bedard's going to pick it up big time.
I think so too. Yeah. No.
Like this season, you mean?
He's looked good.
I think this season. Because he was averaging almost a point a game last season. He's under that this season. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to pick it up. I just think it's a little bit of a slow start for the guy. Yep. But yeah.
I think people also. I said this at the start of the season. I think people had some expectations that might have been a little bit unrealistic. Like, people were saying 100 points or something. I was like, okay, well,
I still think it's realistic for him.
It's not impossible. I'm just saying that's you're pushing the bill a little bit with how bad his team is too. Like, it's not like he's getting some freebies from anyone on his team. He's kind of working for every single point, right? I mean, if you got 80 points again, that'd be crazy. Like, that's really good. So, I mean, I'm not actually worried about him at all.
Yeah. You know what I'm not worried about? Nashville. I think Nashville's going to win the cup.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. I think Nashville's
because they've been off to a real slow start. We were talking about that before they got in here. They got Shea, they got Marchessault, so they got Stammers, but they had an absolutely terrible start. And Soros wasn't looking great either. He just got re-signed, and we know he's a top goalie in the NHL. So, well, why are you saying that? Yeah. What do you think is going to come together for them?
Now, I know you just mentioned Soros, and I think Soros is actually having a good season. He's save percentage is above 900. His goals against average is below 2.5. He's got two shutouts. Those are pretty good numbers from a guy that's on a losing hockey team. A team that has 7 wins, he's got 6 of them.
And they're minus 15, I think. Yeah, like whoa.
I don't really think you can put all the blame on him. I think they just haven't meshed yet. I think that the chemistry's not there, and I think they might need to make a coaching change.
Yeah, it's possible.
I think that might be the way to go. Because, I mean, we saw, was it St. Louis and Boston a couple years ago in the Stanley Cup Finals? And St. Louis was, like, really low in the standings at, like, the halfway point, and then they actually made a coaching change, and they went on and won the cup. I see a similar thing happening with Nashville. Maybe the cup is a little too much, but I think they're making the playoffs. I think they will be a top three team in the Central.
You know,
I think it's going to be Winnipeg, Nashville, and Dallas in the Central. But
I'm not actually opposed to you making that claim. I forget the year. I believe it was St. Louis. They were dead last in the NHL
at
Christmas.
Yeah, that year, yep.
And they came back and won the Stanley Cup. And one advantage Nashville has is that they have a decent few Canadian players. Turns out that if, you know, upwards of 50% of your team is Canadian, you tend to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm.
It seems to be how it works right now.
Interesting.
Yeah. The least amount of players an NHL team has had when they won the Stanley Cup since the 05 lockout has been 18.1% of their team is Canadian.
Wow. Yeah. I think the only piece that they got missing there is the other stat that you need to win is usually have prospects that pan out and some younger players. I don't know if they really have that. They sent that. They had that nice prospect of a goalie, but they kind of turfed him, sent him down. I think he's just developing in the A right now.
But I think that was also to assert that they were confident in Saros.
Yeah, I know. It feels bad. Actually, no, the goalie, sorry, that goalie got traded.
Yeah, he's on San Jose now. Yeah. Askarov. Yeah. I don't know. I think Pittsburgh won, and they didn't have really any prospects throughout the past.
That's in the past. I think that it's. Years. I'm saying it's changed. Mm-hmm. The dynamics changed.
When they won in 2016, 2017.
Even 2009.
Wasn't Gunsell a prospect in 2016?
I would say he was one of the better players on Pittsburgh in 2016. I don't know if he was
a prospect
at the time.
I'm saying more of like you need to have the only like with the current cap space, the only way to win is your fourth line is gonna have to be people that are getting paid minimal, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the only way to have someone that's really good and paid super low is for them to be like new or a rookie kind of.
That's a good point.
So that's good like point. I'm saying with the cap space, like, you can't win essentially because you're gonna have a weak fourth and third line if you don't have enough prospects or new players that you've drafted in for cheap.
It's hard to win without taking advantage of the IR spot or team friendly contracts. Mm-hmm. Like Hyman was on for 5. I think Nuge was on for a little over 5. Evander was on for 5 on Edmonton. And speaking to the coaching change in Nashville, I think that's a really great point because Edmonton at the start of last season started off 2-9. Everyone was extremely disappointed in how they started. They brought in Chris Knobloch. They ended up going 18 in a row, tied the NHL record for most wins, almost beat it. And Knobloch was just an amazing coach even throughout the playoffs. He made a bunch of switches that people would question. After they were down 3-0 to Florida, they won 2 games in a row, and then they switched Fogel onto Dreisaitl's line, completely switched up the dynamics of the line after winning 2. Everyone questioned it. It worked out really well. Fogel ended up scoring early that game, and then they tied and brought it to 7. So I think the coaching change is a good idea, and it can just totally shift the dynamic if it's the right person.
Yeah. Speaking of coaching, I saw there's a really interesting coaching call from the Seattle Kraken. I don't think I've ever seen this before. Before the game started, Kraken's coach decided to like she checked the starting lineups for the other team. I can't remember which teams were playing, but she noticed that they had started guys that weren't on the list, and if you do that apparently that's a penalty.
Mm-hmm. So incorrect scorecard. Yeah,
so she got the Kraken a 2-minute penalty at the start of the game by noticing that they put the wrong guys out essentially, or they had one player that was the wrong player playing, and 2-minute penalty start of the game. So yeah, that's probably good. That's pretty good coaching, in my opinion.
It seems like she's doing a pretty good job. The players seem to like her a lot on that team, and I think the organization is pretty happy with the structural changes.
Yeah,
she's
I mean that is an example where that was fully her. Like, you know, what I mean, like she just was had her eye on the ball and just like, yep, we're gonna have free power play here. So yeah, that's a good move.
No, what a better way to start a hockey game too with a power play, right?
Yeah, no kidding. But school sports, Vanier Cup this past weekend in Kingston. Pretty interesting score, but more interesting still was just the fans. I mean, I thought that was hilarious. Sorry, it's kind of unrelated to the actual game itself, but we somehow crashed a Laurier alumni event, and they had some interesting things to say about people who cheer for Laval and return people from Laval.
Quebec's been good. They've been good at football last couple of seasons, eh? Like Laval has been strong.
UDM also, or sorry, UDM, Montreal. Yeah. But Adam, do you have the score there by any chance?
Yeah, 22-17. Laval beat Laurier.
Tight.
I can't say. I honestly forgot the game was happening.
You know, the only reason why I remembered it was happening is because a guy walked up to me and told me it was happening, and that's when I realized we crushed a Laurier alumni.
Oh, I see.
too bad. Like, you know, Queens was poising themselves to make these two Vanier Cups, and we kind of got rough seasons in these two last years.
One of the heads of this radio station that we're on saying that Queens would be in the Vanier Cup both of this year. And
well, so yeah, we were like Queens was actually planning to go for a full run last year, and it didn't pan out. Just before we head out, I got one last question. I'm not a huge NFL follower, but I have a question for Adam. I heard that Shaquan had a crazy game.
Yeah, he went nuts. 255 yards, 2 touchdowns. It's like the 7th best running game in NFL history. He's on my fantasy team.
Oh, yeah.
Your life is good, man. I was actually down 30 points, and he scored 49 for me to win. So I will take that any day of the week.
Oh, and you won the week.
Oh, yeah. Saquon Barkley.
Rock on, brother. That's
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, Saquon Barkley has been great this season. The Eagles have been a great change of scenery. I mean, the Giants have just fallen apart since he's left. I mean, they just released Danny Dimes. It's a very sad day in New York, but I mean, looks bright for the Eagles. And I mean, the Bills beat the Chiefs. I got to get that in there. Bills Mafia. Let's go Bills. Beat the Chiefs. That was awesome.
All right. And we'll leave that with you guys. Thanks again for tuning in to Plugged in My Ears.
Do you love playing board games? Are you looking?
Hey everyone, this is Joseph Guido. I am CFRC's Airwave YGK Musicians in Residence Project Intern. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFRC's annual funding drive is running until December.